I'm Rick Ganley. This is New Hampshire Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Debates over the budget, casino gambling, gas taxes, medical marijuana, and other matters consumed much of the legislative season this year. And so when lawmakers wrapped up at the end of June, they left some important bills on the table. Some of this legislation will just be taken up in January, but one decision can't wait that long: Medicaid expansion, which, under the Affordable Care Act, is supposed to be in place by 2014. Around the country, about 20 states have said they will expand, and about 20 have said they won't. Most of the still undecided have formed special Medicaid commissions, which have spent the summer studying the pros and cons. In New Hampshire, the groups met weekly. Members have heard from all kinds of experts, from the state's Commissioner of Health and Human Services to national observers like the National Governors Association. Today, the commission meets again as New Hampshire-based analysts give their take on Medicaid expansion. And then next week, it'll be the public's turn to weigh in on whether the state should take this major step. Today in The Exchange, Medicaid surveyed in the Granite State, what the commission's been looking at, what the options debated might mean. Let's hear from you. Should New Hampshire expand this health insurance program or not? What should the commission consider from costs to coverage before it makes its recommendations? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have four guests for the hour. Neil Kirk is here, Republican representative from Ware, ranking Republican on the Finance Committee and a member of the Medicaid Expansion Commission. And Representative Kirk, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure, Laura.
Also with us, Tom Bunnell, policy consultant for New Hampshire Voices for Health, an advocacy group. And Tom, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
It's nice to be with you again, Laura.
Also with us, Charlie Arlinghouse, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, and a member of the Commission to Study the Expansion of Medicaid. And Charlie, thank you for being here.
Hi.
And also with us, Peggy Gilmore, Democratic State Senator from Hollis, and she is also on that Medicaid Commission. And Senator Gilmore, I believe you also have a background as a registered nurse. So
that's right, Laura.
Well-versed in the health field.
Thanks for having us.
Well, and I want to turn to you first, Senator Gilmore, please. Just remind us briefly where this whole study commission comes from, how Medicaid expansion is part of the Affordable Care Act, but it's that part that was not upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. Just give us a refresher there.
Sure, Laura. As you just referenced, within the Affordable Care Act, in the original version, as it were, the expectation was that all states would expand Medicaid, that health insurance for the poor, for those up to what we call 138% of the federal poverty level. That's about a little over $15,000 annual salary for a working adult, or around $22,000 to $23,000 salary for a family of four. When the Supreme Court ruled on the Affordable Care Act, they ruled, as we all remember, that the individual mandate was constitutional. However, states would have the option to expand Medicaid to those poorest working or non-working but poor adults in their state. So this Medicaid expansion would cover people from 19 to 64 within those federal poverty guidelines.
People that are not children who are currently covered by other programs, and people who are not elderly who are covered by Medicare.
And currently our children are covered, pregnant women. You have to be poor and something. Poor and a child, poor and a pregnant woman, poor and elderly or disabled. But this would be take away the and something, and you would be simply low income, unable to purchase, in most instances, unable to purchase insurance otherwise.
And again, before we get into the details of what's been happening this summer, Charlie Arlinghouse, just set the table for us, and Senator Gilmore is taking us there as well. How does Medicaid work now? You know, Senator Gilmore mentioned who's eligible and who isn't. If you could add into that, who pays and who doesn't?
People often get confused, at least I do when I'm talking, about Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare is the health insurance program essentially for seniors. Medicaid, we think of as a health insurance program for for lower income people, although it's actually much broader than that. It's there are a bunch of different categories: disabled adults, some disabled children, some seniors who are sort of dual eligible. Children, for example, I think more than half the children in the state, the majority of children in the state, are eligible for Medicaid. Medicaid is a program, though, which is paid for half by the federal government, roughly. There are some exceptions to this, but half by the federal government, half by the state government. Essentially, the federal government will match what we spend. In this particular category, at least for the first few years, the federal government will pick up the cost of those new people in certain eligible categories. The category we're talking about when we talk about Medicaid expansion is childless adults. Is the population. And then there's a second category of some parents. We cover some of the very poorest parents right now, and this would expand that. And for reference, the subsidies under Obamacare kick in at about 100% of the federal poverty level. And this Medicaid expansion, at least for those two small categories, would go up to about 138% of the federal poverty level. So that's the debate. They couldn't be agreed on in the budget. House wanted it. Governor wanted it. Senate wanted to study it. So there's a study commission, but it was done on an accelerated timetable. The majority of the members of the commission are representatives and senators, and everybody's appointed by an elected official. And then there are three of us, schmoos, who are not elected to anything.
I wouldn't call you a schmoo, Charlie.
I think that we're not second-class members, but we are non-elected officials.
And just a super quick point of clarification, Charlie. We hear, you know, again, health coverage. Does Medicaid include dental? Does it include substance abuse? Does it include mental health? Does it include everything, or is it somewhat limited?
It's somewhat limited. There's a package of services that is dictated by the federal government that if you are providing Medicaid, you must provide these certain things. There are a number of optional coverages, although keeping in mind this was set in the 60s. Some of those optional coverages are things like prescription drugs, which are, you know, probably not optional. And then some of them are dental. As dental specifically, I think we provide dental for kids, but not adults.
And Tom Bonnell, real quickly, you know, Senator Gilmore and Charlie talked about 138% of poverty. That's what the Affordable Care Act would do if New Hampshire signed on to this. What does that mean in terms of people, Tom, here in the Granite State?
Well, again, that's about $15,800 a year for a single person, and it's about $32,500 for a family of four. So we're talking about the lowest income and most vulnerable New Hampshire adults, most of whom are working and who don't now necessarily have access to reliable, affordable health coverage. Best estimates are that there are about 50,000 people in New Hampshire who fit that category and would enroll over time. But the population we're talking about is low-income, working New Hampshire residents who, for example, serve you coffee in the morning, sweep and vacuum the floors in your workplaces, check you out at the grocery store, fix your car, cut your hair, work in a full range of local shops in our communities. So it includes folks who also may provide in-home services to elders and people with disabilities, who teach and care for our kids at child care centers. It also includes folks who, through no fault of their own, may lose a job and can't afford to be or stay on COBRA and need coverage until they get back on their feet. So they are friends and neighbors and family members and colleagues and communities across New Hampshire.
Yeah, and to you, Representative Kirk, you know, most states have already decided, as I said in the introduction, about 40, maybe even a little more than 40, have made their decision already. Why has it been harder for New Hampshire to reach this decision to expand or not to expand?
I think that in New Hampshire we have two diverse opinions on this, and frankly they're reflected on the commission. There's one group of people who, in their hearts, believe that providing that the state has an obligation to care for poor people and provide them with all sorts of entitlements, including health insurance. And for them, expansion is a no-brainer. This would include the governor and the Democratic majority in the House. It's not an intellectual decision. It's a moral kind of decision. And then there's another group of people who feel that it's not the role of government to provide services to everyone, that simply because you're poor should not be a reason for you to be entitled to a particular kind of, in this case, health insurance. And for them, the idea that we, meaning the state government, should provide these services is an immoral kind of decision. In other words, that's not the function of government. This is a country that believes in personal responsibility and your obligation, unless there's something wrong with you, in which case we are compassionate and would provide government assistance. It's your obligation to work your way up into the system and provide whatever it is you need. The safety net, in other words, should be there, but the mesh should not be so fine that everybody is entitled to this.
Those are philosophical.
Those two divergent opinions are something that this commission is hassling with, and all of our discussion has so far not even touched those. The commission at this point has only considered how we should expand. We've had a lot of advocates in favor of expansion and people saying, well, if you're going to expand, there's this waiver or there's this way to do it and so forth. We've yet to hear any discussion about the basic philosophical differences which underlies everyone's opinion and never is talked about. I'm hopeful that the chairman of the commission will bring together to us, not just in discussion but in terms of expert witnesses, opinion on some of these issues. Because if we don't get to that, I don't think we're going to be particularly successful.
Yeah. Well, it's been real interesting to watch the commission over the summer. And I definitely a little bit later maybe want to hear more about just this whole process. But Senator Gilmore, I can see you want to jump in.
Well, I wanted to talk with Representative Kirk a little bit about the issue of the philosophy. You know, as you referenced, Laura, I'm a nurse. And so I see my job as a legislator and at bringing a healthcare background to this commission. This is not about a moral philosophy as much as to me it is. Let's look at the pragmatics of what is healthcare and how do we provide healthcare within our nation. Now, we know several things. We know that well-managed healthcare is more cost-effective. We know that it provides better health outcomes, and we know that it gives an economic boost to our state, to our economy. And so when I look at the question of what is the best way to get the most people into a system, because everybody uses the healthcare system. I mean, this is pretty much
whether they're covered or not.
Whether they're covered or not. 100% of our people at some point in time are part of the healthcare system. So what is our responsibility to make that the best and most efficient system that we can?
And I actually want to follow up on that after a very short break. We invite your questions and comments as well at 1-800-892-6477. Email us. Keep those emails short. exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR. It's 9:19. Good morning. What's going on this week at NHPR? There's an easy way to find out when you sign up for our e-newsletter this week at NHPR. You'll find out what the exchange, word of mouth, and our newsroom are planning for the week and get a behind-the-scenes look at the station. Click on the Connect menu to sign up for our e-newsletter at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And Milne Travel American Express, working with Viking River Cruises, Uniworld Boutique River Cruises, and Talk Tours to help New Hampshire buy locally and travel globally for a river cruise. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Medicaid expansion in the Granite State. We're looking at a special Medicaid expansion commission that's been meeting weekly this summer to decide whether the state should extend Medicaid coverage to more Granite Staters or not. It's a decision that's been made in many other states already, but New Hampshire and a handful of others have yet to decide. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have four guests with us in studio. Three of them are members of the Commission to Study the Expansion of Medicaid: Charlie Arlinghouse, Democratic Senator Peggy Gilmore, and Republican Representative Neil Kirk. Tom Bunnell is also here. He's been involved in this as well, policy consultant for New Hampshire Voices for Health. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And before we go to our listeners, all of you, a couple more points to jump in on. This idea that Senator Gilmore, Charlie, started talking about just before the break, and that is expanding on Medicaid as an efficient system. Some people, mostly on the conservative end, say, hey, don't throw more money into Medicaid. It's not working that well right now. What do you think?
Well, I think the point of having a commission, and I will admit that there are nine different people with nine different ideas of what the point of the commission is, and I may be in a minority on this, but it's a study commission, and I honestly believe that means we're supposed to study stuff, but I'm very politically naive sometimes. But the but we are going to, I think, study a lot of different things, and some of them are these things that each of these things that we're talking about here, the philosophical question, the question about is there a safety net? What kind of a safety net do we provide? Who do we provide it to, and at what level do we provide it? The question about if we provide a specific safety net, is this the most efficient way to do this? Is this the right program to do it? And keep in mind a couple things, that the population we're talking about extending if we call it a safety net, two, is a population that no one has proposed before expanding. So in the last 20 years, people have not proposed bills. The childless adult population is not. We expanded the budget in 2007 by $1 billion, 2009 by $1 billion, and this was not added there. What's different now? Well, one of the things that's different now is the federal government is going to pay a larger share.
100% of the cost first 3 years, 90% right. Thereafter.
So does that change the calculation? It probably does. It certainly changes some of the considerations. But in order to do that, there are a lot of things to look at. And I would say the commission, it's very kind of you to say we've been working real hard all summer. We've been working a little bit for a little bit of the summer. And I think we're just sort of beginning our process. And we've touched on one or two areas, and there are probably five or six that we haven't really gotten to yet. One of the big ones is we've had almost no discussion yet of the sort of the financial aspects of this. And I think at the end of the day, that's going to end up playing a very large role.
Well, what are the financial aspects of it? And then I want to get Tom in, too.
Well, one of the questions is, how much is this going to cost? When is it going to cost? If the federal government said, we're going to do this 100% for the rest of eternity, then I think a lot of people would say, geez, I don't know. Maybe it's hard-pressed to say no to this. It would eliminate a lot of this. Those costs shift. Some of the other questions are, who ends up getting added to the system? There's no question that some of the people that we're going to that are going to start taking up Medicaid are previously insured. They're going to drop private insurance and instead to move to Medicaid. Everybody agrees, I think, that too much of that is a bad thing, keeping in mind that Medicaid pays roughly a third of what private insurance pays in New Hampshire, ballpark, depending on the procedure and the facility and everything else. And so too much of that would be bad, but a little bit of it is unavoidable. The question is how much, and there are a lot of decisions on that. What's the experience of other states that have expanded? There are just a host of issues like that, which change, by the way, depending also on this precise expansion scenario you consider.
Yeah, and Tom Bunnell, that's a concern that I did want to ask you about. Will private companies who currently insure their workers say, hooray, I don't have to do this anymore, you guys can just go on Medicaid?
You know, I think we are confident after discussions with the business community that may happen in some circumstances, but that largely it will not. I was going to mention too that as part of this, New Hampshire is poised to move forward with a Medicaid care management system, a Medicaid managed care system that is designed to streamline our system of care and to enhance and incentivize care coordination and to make the Medicaid program more efficient and cost-effective while keeping patients healthy. And that according to the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services, you know, in a Medicaid managed care scenario, Medicaid expansion is effectively a budget-neutral proposition moving forward with costs that are entirely manageable over time. And that has already been presented to the commission by the department.
Yeah, and Medicaid managed care has been talked about for a long time in New Hampshire, even before Obamacare and all that.
It has.
All right. I want to get our listeners involved and then a lot more questions for all of you. Our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Joining us from Portsmouth is Joan. Hi, Joan. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for letting me speak.
Sure.
I'm particularly interested in the area that I understand hasn't been fully explored, and that's the fiscal impact. And I'm a little concerned that this problem of people dropping their insurance has no hard data behind it, the so-called crowd out, that suddenly everyone will leave these great health plans they have from their employers and go on Medicaid. I've yet to hear any hard numbers on that. But my main concern is if New Hampshire were not to expand Medicaid, I, as someone who is on a private health insurance, that my rates are going to go up because people will be continue the bleeding. People will continue to have appendicitis. People will continue to get ill even if they don't have coverage and turn up in the emergency rooms. So I would like Tom Bunnell to talk a little bit more about the potential savings that expanded Medicaid will bring to New Hampshire.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling in, Joan. And Tom, I'll go to you, but Representative Kirk, you first, this idea that as we have a large uninsured population, they put a strain on the system because they're accessing care but not paying, and that increases costs for everyone. That seems to be Joan's second point there.
I didn't understand her point to be that. I thought her concern was some specific factual information to back up Tom's statement that there won't be a lot of companies, I think the word I would use is dumping their workers on the Medicaid system as opposed to continuing them in private health care insurance, because companies could save a considerable amount of money if they did that. Her second point had to do with whether or not Medicaid would increase premiums, the expansion would increase premiums. And I think the answer for that is yes, it would. The extent we don't know, at least the commission hasn't heard about it. With respect to the overall costs, we're adding, there are roughly, according to the Lewin study, which was presented to the state legislature, and the commission also has it, these are outside expert actuarial consultants and healthcare consultants, they estimated that 58,000 new people would join Medicaid as a result of the expansion if New Hampshire accepted that. Of those, 22,300 would be people who are currently uninsured, and the rest, roughly 35,000, would be people who are currently insured but who find the free insurance available through Medicaid more attractive than the cost sharing that they would have to pay to continue on their employer's insurance. So these people are already getting some kind of coverage. They would join the Medicaid system, and the state would pay 90%, 10% of that after a period of time. What we don't know, and this was Charlie's point, is what will actually happen. We're making estimates and we're basing our decisions on estimates that experts have provided, but the real numbers we don't know. If Tom is wrong and there's a substantial amount of dumping, what will that do to the costs? One thing I can tell you is that the commission has been told that if the state does not go into the expanded Medicaid population, then over the next 8 or 9 years, the state will save, this is the state, not the individual, not the employer, the state will save about $85 million.
If we don't expand.
If we don't expand. If we do expand, we're told that the state will save about $45 million. So in both cases, we save money. We just save more money if we don't expand than if we don't. But remember, that's the state government. It has nothing to do with how much premiums will go up, and they probably will go up, but we don't know how much. It has nothing to do with what hospitals and other providers will receive as compensation for their services. As Charlie indicated, generally providers prefer to get reimbursed under private insurance or Medicare because they pay much more than Medicaid does. One of the ways we in the state have balanced the budget is by reducing the amount of money Medicaid pays to providers. And we're among the lowest in the nation. I'm not sure that we can cut those rates any further.
Well, and maybe I misunderstood Joan's second point. So help me out, Senator Gilmore, and maybe Charlie. I thought her second point, after she talked about the business dumping, you're right, Representative Kirk, was that if you expand Medicaid, some have argued that you have less uninsured people in the system and that that actually lowers rates for everybody else who has private insurance. Is that your understanding, Senator Gilmore?
Well, I think that one of the things we have to go back to is remember the people are in the system now. And so to the degree that they're using the healthcare system, if they're uninsured, in not the most appropriate way and not in a well-managed way, I think we have to acknowledge that that's part of the cost. One of the things, the opportunities that we will be provided is to expand a program that we have currently called HIP, which takes those people who are privately insured now or who have the opportunity for insurance through their workplace. And if it is more effective for the state to pick up the cost rather than them being uninsured going forward, that's something that we could expand under the Medicaid expansion. Currently, we have a small number of people in that program. We could expand that very significantly, thus keeping people in the private market.
That's something that just came up last week on the commission, right?
Yes, it's something that we're looking at in the commission. The other opportunity that this offers us is through the Affordable Care Act, the federal government will be opening up for, in 2017, what are called innovation waivers, when we would, you know, Medicaid is kind of like an old house. You add on, you add on, you add on. And when Charlie referenced that we had done no expansion, that's not completely accurate. We've expanded our Medicaid program like an old house. We've added on, as times have changed since 1965. So for the opportunity to take our newly expanded population and some of our existing population and really design a system that works for New Hampshire. I mean, what a great idea. While we're still getting a very high match from the federal government.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Senator Gilmore. Yeah, the match, 100%, 90% in the years out. Although some people, Senator Gilmore, say, can't really trust the federal government
on
that.
Well, you know, Medicaid has been around since 1965. That's what, 48 years? I'll take a 48-year track record.
The phone number, again, for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Joan, thanks for that call. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Charlie Arlinghouse, I'd like your thoughts, too, on this idea of how Medicaid expansion might affect most of New Hampshire, who people already have private insurance through their workplace or through the regular marketplace.
Yeah, there are a lot of different thoughts about this, and it's something the commission is going to get into a little later. I think the notion of, so there's, you know, some percentage of the population is uninsured, and those people don't not use healthcare. They in fact do use healthcare, often in emergency room situations, or in hospitals in particular, track regularly the amount of uncompensated care they do. And there are a couple kinds of uncompensated care. One is where they provide a service and nobody pays them. One is where they didn't expect to get paid because the people are, you know, below a level of poverty, which is called charity care on financial forms. Charity care at hospitals is between 2 and 2.5%, I believe, of the total hospital revenues or billings. And many hospitals are supporting expansion. Their thinking is that, we're going to take people for whom we get no money, instead we'll get Medicaid.
And get a little bit of money.
Yeah, and they don't like Medicaid, and they think they lose money on every Medicaid patient, but they're going to lose less money on these. And, one of the things that I think we're going to look at in the future is there are a couple of states that have actually tried this, and we need to sort of look at that. And you know, when clarification on something Senator Gilmore said about, I didn't say we've never expanded Medicaid. What I said specifically is that we've never proposed expanding Medicaid to this population, which is a very different population from, in fact, one segment of the population is one we don't cover at all today. The question is, how will that behave? One of the things we're going to do is look at how it behaved in other states. I have some anecdotal evidence, which is why I want to look at this instead of just relying on anecdotal evidence, that in fact, in one of the states that expanded recently, they had really hoped to reduce charity care costs. And in fact, their charity care costs went up dramatically faster than, for example, New Hampshire's did.
Which state was that, Charlie?
That was Maine.
So. I think I remember that, yeah.
And I've written about this before. By the way, I have no idea why, and that's very important because I think that the point of a commission like this and the point of studying any issue is to ask constantly about everything. Why? And someone said, well, why do you think? And I said, you know what? I don't know. Let's talk to people. And in fact, I'm hopeful that we'll talk to people who disagree with each other, because you often, sort of like your program does, you often tease out a lot more. If you just talk to me about Medicaid, you'll get a very different impression than if you talk to Tom. And I suspect that the person who's sort of up in the air about it would probably want to talk to both of us and probably somebody else too, but get kind of like, he didn't say, and I said, okay, I get that.
Yeah. Well, actually, I wanted to ask Tom a question about something you said, Senator Gilmore, and ask all of you, because it's been real interesting for me to read last week about the commission looking at this, if I could call it a third way with this expansion question. Tom Bunnell, I'm talking about whether private insurers could cover those newly eligible for Medicaid if New Hampshire were to expand. Can you just explain this a little bit more to us as plainly as possible, Tom? It's very complicated, but it's this idea that, you know, maybe you don't expand Medicaid in the traditional way. Maybe you bring in private insurers. Arkansas and Iowa are said to be looking at this.
Lori, in response, let me just step back first and say that there is a privatization of Medicaid that already is happening in New Hampshire and for which there is an additional opportunity. So as I said before, we're transitioning to Medicaid managed care, and that transition appears to be very close to a place where it can be implemented.
And is that a good thing, the privatization of Medicaid?
Well, I think most people believe that it is, that it will streamline and may start make our program more cost effective. Together with that is the health insurance premium payment program, the HIP program that Senator Gilmore mentioned earlier, which under a Medicaid expansion context would allow anyone who is currently privately insured or who has insurance offered to them by their employer to, instead of just enrolling in Medicaid, to retain their employer-sponsored insurance, and Medicaid would subsidize their cost sharing, their share of the premium or other costs that are related to their end of the payment.
And do you think this is a reasonable compromise between those who want to extend Medicaid in the traditional way and those who are not sure about it?
Well, I will say that those who are interested, who believe that government's role should have some limitations, or even to be more specific, that in the realm of ensuring people's health and safety, that a public-private partnership is more appropriate than just a public or government-sponsored solution, that this kind of partnership between private insurers and private employers and government is a helpful step forward. So I will also step back with you if you would like, and we can talk about this. There is another option that is much more complicated that requires something called a Medicaid waiver to achieve, and that involves New Hampshire's health insurance exchange or marketplace. And I think that's what you were referring to in your question.
Right. And Representative Kirk, I definitely want your thoughts on this. We're heading into a break, but I want your thoughts on whether this is a good idea or not. Your thoughts. Does it represent a compromise? It's something New Hampshire should explore. The New England Journal of Medicine recently looked at this idea, so we'll talk about that coming up. We'll take your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm show, a Pennsylvania arrest renews debate over assisted suicide, then the future of television. All coming up on the Diane Rehm show.
The Diane Rehm show this morning after the exchange, beginning at 10 o'clock on NHPR. And support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, keeping bodies in motion on the web at nhoc.com. And the White River Flyer, offering scenic rail journeys from the White River to East Thetford, with a stop at the Monshire Museum Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Information at rails-vt.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the New Hampshire economy will get an update, the good and bad and in-betweens. Email us your stories, your thoughts on New Hampshire's economy these days before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, the status of Medicaid expansion in New Hampshire. We're looking at the work of a special commission that's been looking at this issue over the summer. Join us, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org. And Representative Kirk, I wanted to go to you next and look at this idea that Tom Bunnell talked about just before the break, the idea of using Medicaid expansion funds to help people buy private coverage instead of expanding their coverage through traditional Medicaid, if I could call it that. This is something the commission just started looking at last week. What do you think?
And that's the issue that the commission is supposed to be deciding. If you decide to go ahead with Medicaid expansion, that offers interesting possibilities. Generally speaking, the private sector operates in a way that is designed to reduce costs and provide a better outcome, as opposed to state government, which has other equally important but very different objectives. However, the problem with doing this is that I think it has to cost more because of the fact we talked before about different reimbursement rates. If a private insurance company is going to reimburse a provider at a higher rate than Medicaid, then it's going to cost somebody more money to have the private sector provide this insurance unless we change those rates in some way. So I think there are really important financial issues that have to be looked at doing that. There's one other point that I'd like to make that we haven't brought up. We've been talking about this as if New Hampshire were an island. Well, we're Americans. And when we say the federal government is going to pay for it or pay substantially for it, that's also us. The federal government has a $17 trillion national debt. Every year we run about $1 trillion deficit in each budget, roughly a third of the budget that somebody has to pay for. Either we print money and risk inflation, or we borrow from the British and the Japanese and the Chinese. The ACA, although it was costed out to be budget neutral, in fact is not. The commission heard a couple of days ago from the from some national experts who told us that President Obama's decision to allow businesses to delay their part of the program for a year would cost the nation $12 billion over the period of that we're talking about, the 8 or 10 years. Now, if New Hampshire doesn't participate in Medicaid, we've just released or saved roughly $2.5 billion to offset that $12 billion cost increase. I know it sounds small, and New Hampshire is but one state, but is it responsible for New Hampshire to participate in a program that increases the deficit, increases the national debt, and in effect passes on to our children and grandchildren the responsibility for paying for what benefits we now would be giving to poor adults, able-bodied adults?
Senator Gilmore, what do you think, the big picture?
Well, I think in the big picture, we all need to be concerned about our national debt. Now, we know for a fact that the Affordable Care Act will reduce the national deficit going over time. We also know, and I believe this very strongly, that the rising cost of health care is one of the biggest threats we face as a nation. This economic increase of an aging population, particularly in a state like ours, and the rising cost of care is just something that's unsustainable. And if we do not, as a state and as a nation, find ways that will manage the cost of our care, reduce the increase in the spending, we are all in a very bad place. And this is one way, bringing in well-run managed care, ensuring the people that live in our state and in our nation so that they get preventive care, so that we are not managing health care through crisis. This is the most expensive way we can deliver service, and we've got to make changes in that. And that's one of the things that happens through the Affordable Care Act.
Let's take another call if we could. And Karen's waiting in Concord. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I've been to several of the commission meetings, and it kind of surprises me when I hear people say who are on the commission, which I heard one of the speakers on the call right now say, is that there's some confusion about the mission of this committee or commission. And I just wonder if that is something that everybody feels. I keep hearing it from the people who are the opponents of the Affordable Care Act, and those people are also saying that it would be immoral to begin Medicaid expansion despite the fact that it would be free for 3 years, because it would be morally wrong to stop it once you started. And to me, doesn't that mean that it would be morally wrong not to take up the opportunity in the first place? And just the last thing that I would like to express is concern that this commission is really got a big job to do in a very short time period, and yet there are some weeks that the commission is not going to meet, and I appreciate that Representative Kurt had asked that one of those weeks did get used, which was last week, but there are still at least one, if not 2 weeks, that they're not going to meet. And at one very important meeting when Health and Human Services was...
Karen, if you could wrap up, please, because we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I'd love to have our guests respond to your thoughts.
Sure. That I noticed that Senator Sanborn wasn't there, who was a big opponent, and that was really important information. Shouldn't these individuals be there every time?
So some concerns about the process, Charlie Ellinghaus.
A couple things, and I want to defend Senator Sanborn, who was there by phone, and we've had a number of meetings where commissioners have called in by phone. My suspicion is that every single one of the people on the commission will at some meeting call in by phone. I know of a Tuesday that I can't make right now, and I'll tune in by phone. I think everybody on the commission, regardless of whether you love them or hate them, is, and I say that as somebody that I think she's probably not in love with, everybody is taking it very seriously, and I've not noticed anybody yet who's not taking it seriously. There are some concerns. I think when I said, I think it was I who I was the one who said that, exactly what the commission is supposed to do. I think that the commission has a very broad mission to study Medicaid, and it's not that, oh, I don't think we're supposed to do that. Yeah, we're supposed to do that. I think that a lot of people are interested in talking about different things. If we were to each set the speakers ourselves, there are certain speakers that I really want to hear from. There are certain speakers that the guy next to me really wants to hear from. There are certain speakers the guy next to him really wants to hear from. I think that's going to go forward. In terms of the process, are we meeting as often as we could? Maybe not. I have no objection to meeting every Tuesday. But, keep in mind there are a lot of people on this commission. And it's October 15th is coming up fast, but it's also a long way away. So I would have less concern, I think, than she does. And just acknowledge that but this is a very political process, and I get that. And no one is naive. And maybe 80% of this is politics and is going to be moot after the fact. But sometimes, even when something is a show, from some people's standpoint, you can learn things from it. And certainly that's how I'm approaching it, that even if it's a show for some people, I feel I can learn things from it.
Is it a show, Representative Kirk?
I don't know. The compromise certainly was a legitimate policy compromise.
The compromise meaning the idea to study this at
right.
all.
Clearly, the governor is very anxious that we expand and got herself very much involved in the process to change the dates, as did the Speaker of the House. But I think the commissioners are very sincere, and I think that if we can work together to get a larger variety of expert opinion before the commission, then our results, our recommendations will be so much better. As I've said before, at the moment we're doing one perspective, and I think we need to get to the other perspectives, and I hope we do that.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom Bonnell? You're sort of the outsider in this. Not that you haven't been involved, because you have, but you're not a member of the commission. Is it looking, as Representative Kirk says, just at how we should expand, or is it looking at this question of if we should expand?
Well, I think there are a variety of perspectives on the commission that are actually reflected, I think, in the panel that you have before you today. There are those who may be philosophically opposed to government taking any role in this or doing this at all. And then there are those who appear to be looking for a pragmatic New Hampshire solution. How can we do this and do this in a way that works best for our state? And that folks approach this from a variety of perspectives with different assumptions, as Representative Kirk mentioned earlier. My understanding is that the commission is hearing from spokespeople, from representatives and from experts who have a range of opinions along those lines. And even there's a session, I think, this afternoon that will have a range of perspectives, philosophical perspectives about doing this. That said, on the pragmatic side about accepting the federal dollars to do this, with our Department of Health and Human Services saying that it's effectively a budget neutral, it won't cost the state over time to do this. There still are concerns about whether the federal government will continue to fund the program at the level that it has been established within law. And quite frankly, there are some ways of addressing that concern. And also just briefly say there are Republican governors across the country, several who support Medicaid expansion in their states, and virtually all of them, to address that federal financing concern, proposed trigger or circuit breaker language, effectively saying in their legislation that if the federal government ever reduces its financing commitment to this expansion that is set out in the statute as it was enacted, that we as a state will suspend or terminate our participation in the expansion as of the effective date of that reduction. And I do think that's an example of something that this commission and that pragmatists on this commission are likely to entertain and look at and have some thoughtful conversation about.
So let me just clarify. So some of the Republican governors have said, Tom, okay, federal government, we'll expand as you would like us to, but if you renege on your side, we're dropping these folks who are newly eligible.
Correct.
Representative Kirk?
Nice try, Tom. As a practical matter, you would be first to man the barricades once the trigger came into effect, and you would say, you can't possibly do this. It's, and you can put in the adjective that you want to. But there's no way that you would, in fact, agree and actively argue once the trigger was pulled that, yes, we have to end the expansion.
So Tom, I got to let you jump in there. May I respond? Senator Gilmore.
Thank you, Representative Kirk, for that. What we're talking about here is legislation. So if the commission were to recommend legislation that had this kind of provision in it and the legislature were then to enact it, what that legislation does, it's enacted into law, is to give everyone prior notice out in the world that if the federal government reneges on its promise, then we are out.
How would you feel about that?
It gives prior notice, and what it means is that the federal government is responsible for that decision. What I will say is that intending to do in the meantime is to have active discussions with our congressional delegation, as would folks in my position all over the country, to help ensure that the federal government never reneges on its promise to do this.
You haven't answered my question, sir.
Well, I want to get Senator Gilmore in here too and Charlie Arlinghouse before we close out. But that's a scenario that people have talked about, and yes. I've heard the concerns on both sides there for sure. Go ahead, Senator Gilmore.
Well, I certainly think – I mean, I understand Representative Kirk's reluctance to say we've given and then we will take away. Certainly, I think if you ask people who are insured, probably all of us in this room, if we had the opportunity to have insurance or not, I think the answer would be very clear. The other thing is, I believe it was in the last legislative session with Representative Kirk, where we did indeed make a reduction in our people who were covered through the Healthy Kids program. So when we try and find solutions as legislators, which we are mandated to do, and to look at the economics and the policy, I think we are charged to make those decisions. And I think Tom is right. Those of us who are very practically oriented say we need to look out to the future and put in those plans, those contingency plans, to make the best decisions at the time. And we will do that.
I think this exchange illustrates it to some extent what the commission is and what the commission isn't, and its role and the legislative role. And one is that at the end there are going to be at least two, maybe three or four different reports coming out of this commission. The yes-no at the beginning isn't what matters. This is not a yes-no question that we're answering. Oh, yeah, we're all in favor of X. The legislation is not going to propose a piece of legislation. The legislation is not probably – or the commission will probably not propose something very specific unless it's what the governor wants. But the what will happen is that people will talk about different aspects of a trigger if there's a trigger, different aspects of private coverage if there's private coverage. Is the Arkansas model a really bad idea? Is the HIP model a better idea? That kind of stuff. And the collected wisdom or lack thereof in those reports – are going to be tools for a legislative debate that is going to be remarkably different from any of the discussions in one committee room in the summer in Concord. However, it will be a tool used in those debates. So there'll be a lot of things that go on. And my suspicion is that Representative Kirk and I, who come from similar philosophical points, won't agree on everything. Peggy and Tom won't agree on everything. Different people won't agree on everything. But there'll be bits and pieces here that people can then use in a Donnybrook of a fight that's going to occur in the fall.
And it's going to occur in the fall. It's supposed to be done before January, right, Representative Kirk? Can you?
I don't know.
The expectation and hope of those who favor expansion is that it will be done in the fall so that the program can go into effect on January 1st along with the rest of the country. And by the program, I mean the expansion. But it may very likely not occur until the legislative session. A special session must be, would be called by the governor, but one body or another can meet and then immediately adjourn, and no action would be taken until the spring session. So I'm not sure when this will actually happen. It is the hope and expectation of proponents of expansion that it take place as soon as possible.
Yeah. Senator Gilmore, timelines, deadlines, and so forth.
Well, I hope that the legislature would take very seriously looking at the recommendations of the commission, whatever they may be, acting on those recommendations. I think that's the responsible legislative action to take, and that would be prior to January 1.
Well, one thing's for sure, we have a lot more to talk about in the months ahead. Thank you all very much for being here. Representative Kirk, it was good to see you. Thank you for your time. That's Neil Kirk, Republican representative from Ware, a ranking Republican on the Finance Committee, and a member of the Medicaid Commission. Tom Bunnell, good to see you. Thank you for being here as well. Tom Bunnell, policy consultant for New Hampshire Voices for Health. Senator Gilmore, thank you also.
Thanks for the discussion, Laura.
Peggy Gilmore, Democratic Senator from Hollis. She's on that Medicaid Commission. And Charlie Arlinghouse, thank you also.
Thank you.
Charlie Arlinghouse, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, also a member of the commission. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer this week is David Darman. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Catherine Muzzy. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, an economic update. It's still a good news, bad news scenario here in New Hampshire, although a lot more good lately. Unemployment ticked down in June to 5.3%, as did foreclosures, while home sales are roaring. But in the business world, a recent national study finds New Hampshire lagging in new business startups. We'll look at the economy from all sides. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
This is NHPR. It's 9:58. The Diane Rehm Show is next. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Lang McClowry Real Estate, serving the real estate needs of New Englanders from 16 office locations and online at lmsre.com. And Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health, 13 locations statewide. More information at d-hdocs.org. This is NHPR.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
UAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. In Pennsylvania, the daughter of a 93-year-old man is being charged with assisting in his suicide. Authorities say she gave her father, who was a hospice patient, a vial of morphine to help him die, a claim she and her attorneys deny.